This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey, Willie. Well, multiple European diplomats and U.S. officials signaling to NBC News that potentially we are on the brink of something. A ceasefire deal would likely, Willie, look like Hezbollah moving its heavy weaponry behind the Litani River and the Israelis moving out of southern Lebanon. There are major hurdles, not least of which the difference between what the two sides are saying. So the leader of Hezbollah saying that deal needs to be complete and comprehensive, whereas Israel is saying that it reserves the right to deal with, quote, disruption. That's according to the Israeli ambassador.
Ryan Wiggins filling in for Annie Fry today, moving from the co-host chair to the host chair, which means it's my privilege to get to talk to Jim Carafano, who we get to talk to just about once a week. Jim, thanks for being here.
Hey, good to be with you.
So we listened to that clip there, and pardon me that I've heard them talk about a ceasefire a few times now in the Middle East, but is this one different?
It doesn't matter. In the end, it's not the real resolution to the problem. As you know, we've talked about on the show a number of times, the root of all evil in the Middle East is Iran. And so unless somebody has taken it to the Iranian regime and really cranking back on their ability to control and supply and empower surrogates like Hamas and Hezbollah, it's very, very difficult to get to what's called sustainable peace, which is, I think, what Israelis really want. I mean, Israelis just want to live in peace, and nobody's looking to turn the land into the world of milk and honey and solve every problem. But the Israelis would like to be able to go to bed at night and not worry about they're going to get murdered in their sleep. To have that on a sustained basis, somebody has to deal with the Iranian regime, and so I wouldn't be looking at the calendar other than look at the day, January 20th, because that's the day I think things really start to change.
Jim, I was just looking at a friend of mine on Facebook who lives in Israel. He is an Israeli by birth, and he was posting a Bible verse and saying, I'm really believing this today because I'm in a bunker right now. So things are certainly escalating. I guess my question for you is, do we put too much emphasis on a U.S. president for peace in other nations, or does the U.S. have that much power over what happens overseas?
Well, so this is the thing. The U.S. does have a lot of power and influence, but it's not there to make peace in the world, and it's not there to solve everybody's problems. It's there to look after the interests of the United States. It so happens that it is in the interest of the United States that, you know, like in the forest, you have an interest in making sure the fire doesn't start and burn the whole forest down. The Middle East is in the middle of everything. It's the crossways of oil flows, population flows, global financial networks. So it is in the U.S. interest that part of the world doesn't blow up. And this is not a heavy lift. This isn't about ending endless wars or a massive American troop presence. Donald Trump demonstrated really with a modicum of influence and power that the Iranians, you can put the Iranians back in a very small box. Joe Biden just did the opposite. Joe Biden released the Iranians and unleashed them on the region and created chaos. And so, look, I mean, it's just one of the things that happens is when you take an age of chaos out of the White House, the world winds up being a little better place to live in.
Jim Carafino is on the phone with us, senior counselor to the president and E.W. Richardson Fellow for International Engagement at the Heritage Foundation. We were actually breaking out in discussion about this yesterday, unexpectedly, but we did, talking about how Iran, just like you said, I think probably a lot of it is stuff that we've learned from talking to you, that Iran is the head of all of the terror going on in the region. But what specifically will Trump do once he gets into office, either that he already was doing in his first term, but certainly different than what Biden is doing now? How does he change the landscape specifically with Iran?
Well, I think there are two things. First of all, when the United States really tries to be an energy superpower and we drive exports, it significantly brings down the price of oil, which dramatically relieves the tensions in the regions, because people aren't fighting over a scarce resource anymore, and it weakens Iran's economy. Then there are lots of things you can do to actually curtail their exports. And then there's a lot of things you can do to make the regime more risk averse. So for example, right now you've got the Houthis, who are basically raging war throughout the Red Sea, driving up the cost of shipping for the entire world. Except for the Chinese, by the way. They don't borrow the Chinese ships because the Chinese ships are on their side. So I think Trump comes in, he dramatically deals with all those things. And we have seen a very consistent pattern of behavior with the Iranian regime. And if you remember, they are actually sitting on a population that hates them. They were swept, much like Joe Biden, they were swept to power in the Iranian Revolution with this promise that they were going to transform the country and make life better for everybody. And decades later, everybody knows that they've been completely ripped off. I mean, the country is run by a bunch of thugs, which are exploiting the Iranian people. And no Iranian person can actually live their life in peace. And they would be happy to be rid of these yahoos. And all the yahoos care about is staying in power, perpetuating the revolution. So the way this works is the more they feel threatened from both within and without, the more cautious they become, the less they're willing to risk things like unleashing their surrogates on other people or threatening to have nuclear weapons and other stuff. And so the more pressure Trump puts on them, the quieter they will be.
Jim Carafano, you mentioned China. Everything I read about China, which is few and far between, I mean, obviously China tries very hard to control what is said about China outside of China and within China. Are they in a difficult, even vulnerable spot right now economically? And is this really a time where Trump coming in could change the way we deal with China?
I believe so. I do think that they've got a lot of structural weakness in their economy. Look, it doesn't mean that if you have a weak economy, you're not a threat. I mean, look at Russia, look at North Korea. If you're running a dictatorship, you can be a threat to other people because you can literally shift all your money into that stuff and starve everybody else. But the Chinese do have structural weaknesses, and they're actually quite unpopular. I was with a group of folks from Africa the other day. The popular mythology is China owns Africa. They bought everybody up. And I would ask these people is, how many jobs have the Chinese actually created in Africa for Africans? And they looked at me and said, none. The Chinese come in, they bring in their own workers. They're not creating jobs. Africa's the fastest growing place on the planet. They're desperate for jobs for young people. Africa's doing none of that. And so I don't think China's the most popular country around the world. And I do think, they're ready for a snapback. And actually what we have seen in recent months is, the Chinese are buying more people off than ever. And I think the reason for that is that they really can't deliver on power and influence in the world. And so instead what they're trying to do is just corrupt people and buy them off.
Jim, this question is not, it dives into economics a little bit, but we were talking about the Trump tariffs. Do you see these things as a little bit more of a tool to get what Trump wants out of world leaders, or is he saying, no, we're actually going to do these tariffs?
I think it's a combination between a tool to fix some market distortions where people are actually kind of, you know, they do the thing like, I undersell everybody, draw everybody else out of business, and I jack the price up. So I think it's in part to fix the market distortions, and in part it's a negotiating tool to get people's attention. I, people pretend like somehow Trump is like Darth Vader. You know, the reality is Joe Biden put more out in tariffs, put on more tariffs than Trump did in his administration. And every American president has used tariffs. What Trump, I think, is just, he's a little more strategic about it in the sense that he tries to use it to fix, you know, fix market behaviors.
So last kind of topic for you, we're going around the world here quickly, Jim, but in Ukraine and Russia, we haven't hit on that yet. We're sitting here between U.S. administrations, and just like we were talking about a minute ago, it seems as if the U.S. administration has a lot to do with a lot of these world events, but they're between leaders. You know, Joe Biden's not really leading anything, but he's still technically in charge. Trump is, you know, pulling every string he can before he's even in office. Explain what's going, you know, when people are reading about this topic, right, they're reading highly partisan takes. Just explain right what's going on right now with what Biden's trying to do versus what Trump's trying to do and what Putin and Zelensky are responding with.
Yeah. Well, I think all over the world, what we're seeing is the world adjusting to the incoming leadership of Donald Trump. So Donald Trump is already reshaping global affairs, and he's not in charge yet. What's happening in Ukraine is really simple. I actually think that both Ukraine and Russia are close to strategic exhaustion, and both are ready for a pause. Now, don't get me wrong. Russia still wants to conquer Ukraine. Ukraine still wants to get all its territory back. But if you think like fighters that are just waiting for the bell, I think they're both ready for a break. And they both know that Donald Trump is going to insist on a break. So what they are both doing right now is throwing everything into it to try and be in the strongest position possible. So when Trump comes in and says playtime's over, this is going to stop, they're in a stronger bargaining position. I think that's what's going on.
Do you think there's a chance that there's a day one ceasefire there or whatever it's called?
I don't know if there'll be a day one ceasefire. And I don't think actually Ukraine is the hot button issue. I think the Middle East is a much more dangerous and volatile situation, and I think that the president's going to have to really get that under control first as a priority.
It's weird to say this is good times, but it does finally look like we've been in a tunnel, and hey, you can kind of see the light at the end of some of these things as long as the train stays on the tracks, you know?
I think so, and I think, you know, this is the thing. You have to get past kind of all these kind of, you know, the tariffs are actually a good example. You see this all, people say, oh my God, if Trump does all these tariffs, the prices are going to go through the roof. Well, first of all, he hadn't done anything yet because he's not president. So we don't know how many tariffs the president's actually going to impose. And then the other thing is, look, people talk like tariffs are the only thing that drives the economy. And that's actually not true. There's a lot of other things you do that drive productivity. And so people might not even notice the tariffs. The people that are hit with the tariffs might not even pass the prices on to consumers. So just the notion that by the threat of tariffs, the end of the world is near, it's not true. You have to look at the totality of what the policies are, how they affect the economy, how they affect security, how they affect public safety. You know, immigration is another thing. People say, oh, my God, look how much it's going to cost to deport all these people. But when you compare that with the cost of illegal immigration, it's actually much cheaper to deport people. So I take a chill pill or a long vacation or just sit back and don't listen to the news for a couple of months, because I think 6 months from now we should be in a much stronger place as a country.
Yeah, that's good advice, especially going into, excuse me, a holiday week. So take some time off. Hope you get to come home, Jim, and spend some time with the family.
But whatever you do, do not stop listening to the Annie Fry Show.
Yeah, that was what we were going to say once we hung up with you, because I felt bad.
Thanks, buddy.
We were going to say, thanks, Jim. All right. Hey, don't go away. Thanks, Jim. All right. Hey, don't go away. This is the Annie Fry Show. We will be here tomorrow, of course. Annie's got the week off, but we are live here at 121 here in St. Louis. Guess what's coming up tomorrow night? Guns N' Hoses. And this is the first time we have ever broadcast Guns N' Hoses. First time it's ever been broadcast on the radio, actually. So we're kind of excited about it. That's why we've been promoting it so much. It's a fun event. It is kind of a St. Louis tradition at this point, 37th annual Guns N' Hoses. Steve Holly is going to be in next to give me the rundown as somebody who's never been to the event and wants to know a little bit more about how intense this fighting actually gets. Stick around.